This is the Ray Hanania on Politics podcast, which explores issues I raise in my award-winning syndicated political columns that run in Chicagoland newspapers each week. You can get information on all my writings and my podcasts by visiting www.hanania.com. Thank you for listening. I always want to hear your thoughts, so feel free to email me your comments.
It's Friday, February 14, 2020, and I'm Ray Hanania, your special U.S. correspondent for the Arab News newspaper, and you're listening to the Arab Street Radio and podcast broadcast from Detroit, Michigan, through 690 AM WNZK Radio. The Arab Street Radio and podcast is a part of the U.S. Arab Radio Network, hosted by Leila El Husseini, in an effort to energize and empower Arab Americans to stand up for their rights. For more information on this radio show and U.S. Arab Radio, you can go to hanania.com, and afterwards you can check out our podcasts on iTunes or Spotify or visit any of the podcasting websites and our website podcast site, thearabstreet.org. That's a lot of words. The radio show call-in number is 248-557-3300. By the way, happy Valentine's Day to everybody. We hope you have a great one. It's always nice to be here on radio and take your phone calls. We're going to be talking with a guest, hopefully, that she's, in fact, she just called in, which is always good to know. Sarah Gadd, the Democratic candidate for the first congressional district election in the March 17 Democratic primary in Illinois. Sarah is going to be the guest this morning, and we'll talk about, she has this phenomenal story of challenges that she's overcome, and we're going to talk to her about that. She suffered a serious car accident, and she just injured herself badly, and we're going to talk a little bit about all that, what she went through. And of course, you know, when you have a car accident, you get hurt really bad, they give you painkillers and prescription painkillers, and you take these painkillers and you use them to get rid of the pain, and pretty soon, before you know it, you get kind of addicted to it. And a lot of people sometimes end up, after they don't need it anymore, end up being addicted to it and use it. And that got our guest in trouble. But she turned her life around, and we're going to talk about that amazing story. Before we do the interview, I want to point out now that, you know, you can listen to us in Detroit on WNZK 690 AM radio, or you can always go online, and if you go to my website at hanania.com, you can get the links. There are two different links where you can listen to us online. And beginning, I think, a couple weeks ago, Leila, the show organizer, the radio show host, her show is Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 a.m. in Detroit, 7 to 8 a.m. in Chicago. They've expanded their show now, and it's online 24/7, so you can hear repeats of this show over and over again, along with other shows, by visiting the links on our website at hanania.com. Let me welcome our guest, Sarah Gadd. Sarah, thank you for calling in this morning. We really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. And just give us a little background about, not the accident and how you overcame it, but tell us a little bit about yourself, and maybe a little bit about the first district. And I know the election for Illinois residents who are listening to this radio show or who might listen to the podcast. I know this district includes a lot of the southwest suburbs. It's kind of half African-American, half white. A lot of the residents on the southwest side of the district have never felt Bobby Rush ever cared for them. So it sounds like you have a good opportunity to make some change and represent everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about your background. And before we get into the problems that you had, which I think is a fascinating story, but you know, give us a little, who is Sarah Gadd? And, you know, what this district, what the big issues are in this race in the first district.
Yeah, so my name is Sarah Gadd. I'm in my third year of law school at the University of Chicago. I'll get to this later, but I didn't start out in law. I started out in medicine, but I'm very passionate about criminal justice reform. I run two organizations, one to help incarcerated opioid addicts and another one to help the Chicago homeless. I represent youth and young adults from the South Side for free through different legal aids throughout Chicago. And the first congressional district, it's a very, like you said, diverse district. Very different needs throughout the district. And my parents immigrated from Egypt in the 1980s, I believe, to give my sisters and I a better life. They kind of wanted us to live the American dream. And they immigrated to Minnesota, and my mom took a job as a dishwasher at a local hospital, and my dad drove taxis, and we were pretty poor growing up. I was raised in the same building where Prince grew up before he, you know, became famous.
That's pretty cool.
The building is actually on Wikipedia. It's called The Ghetto in the Sky.
Yikes.
It's one of the more impoverished parts of St. Paul.
So, and where were your mom and dad from in Egypt? Cairo or from a different town?
My mom was from Alexandria. My dad was from Cairo.
Cool. Have you ever been there, or you were born here in the U.S., or were you born overseas? Here in the U.S. Cool.
Yeah, born here in the U.S., but my parents took us to Egypt almost every summer. It's kind of like most Egyptian Americans or Arab Americans will, a lot of times their children will go visit their country of origin during the summers or spend a couple of years there to learn the language.
My parents are Palestinian from Jerusalem and Bethlehem, and we would go there all the time when I was younger. And I sense when I talk to you that you're kind of, you know, some people are Arab American, some people are American Arab. It sounds like you're very Americanized.
I mean, I guess you could say that.
Well, in the sense you understand how the system works in this country, right? I mean, you get it. Your campaign has been very good. I've been through your website. But let's tell everybody where your campaign website is, by the way. What's the address?
It's SarahGadd2020.com. It's Sarah with an H, GAD2020.com. I was more of the American Arab, I guess, so to speak. Until my accident and everything happened. But when I was in college, I wanted to be a doctor, and I think that's about as.
Yeah, Arab. And every Arab parent wants their son or daughter to be either a doctor or a grocery store owner. Okay, that's the way it always starts out. So I got into journalism. I know my parents were like shocked. Why aren't you a doctor like your cousins? So now you have an interesting story about why you didn't become a doctor, but I want to hang on to that for a few minutes and just talk a little bit more about, you know, you personally. I want people to get to know you. You're Arab American. Do you speak Arabic at all? Are you fluent, or do you just speak it the way I do? You know, just I know the big words and some of the phrases and stuff.
No, I mean, I speak it pretty fluently. I speak the Egyptian dialect.
Nice.
And my Arabic is like, it's kind of broken to a native person. So when I'm speaking Arabic to a native,
from the Middle East.
Yeah. And I'm using the Egyptian dialect with my broken Arabic. Sometimes it's hard to understand, especially if you're from like one of the, like Shami countries or like Lebanon or Palestine, because we enunciate our G's with a G sound and the other one, their countries use the But I also write and read Arabic.
Wow. Fluently. You do better. You're better than me. Wow, that's phenomenal.
I actually read and write it better than I do speak it.
Really? Oh, cool. Well, I'm looking. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, after my car accident and everything that followed, I had a traumatic brain injury that affected my ability to speak.
Really?
And so, yeah. And so wow. My foreign language speaking skills kind of diminished, but I still completely understand it. It's just a little bit harder to speak it.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break, Sarah. We got three breaks we got to do during the radio show, and you're gonna stay on for the full hour with us until 8 o'clock Chicago time, 9 o'clock Detroit time. Everybody out there, you're listening to the Arab Street Radio. My guest online is Sarah Gadd. She is a candidate. She's Egyptian American. She's a candidate for Congress in the 1st congressional district in Illinois. And it's kind of important for everybody to support her because I actually think she has a great chance to win. She's running against Bobby Rush, who's been a longtime incumbent. I actually ran his first election campaign, I think, back in 1992 after I left the Chicago Sun-Times. And he's been, as far as I'm concerned, nothing but a big disappointment. I broke with him a long time ago. Because it was pretty clear he didn't really care about the district. He focused on himself, his family, building up his own assets. Bobby Rush has done very, very well for himself in Congress over the 20-plus years. And I think it's time that we find somebody in the district who really represents everybody. And I think our candidate here who's on the line with us, Sarah Gadd, can represent everyone, African-American, Hispanic, white, the entire district. And she's going to tell us about the story that got her into this race right after we take a break, when we come back right after these messages. And this is Ray Hanania here at the Arab Street Radio and Podcast, broadcast from Detroit, Michigan through 690 AM WNZK Radio. Our phone number is 248-557-3300. It is Valentine's Day, February 14th, so happy Valentine's Day to everybody. Happy Valentine's Day to our guest, Sarah Gadd, an Egyptian-American who is Muslim, who is running in the 1st Congressional District against incumbent Bobby Rush. And I've covered politics 45 years, almost 20 years, covering Chicago City Hall, and I think she has a great chance to actually turn this do-nothing, in my opinion, congressman out of office, somebody that I knew real well who just completely turned away from public service and doing the right thing for taxpayers. And by the way, let me give a little plug this weekend on Sunday, February 16th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., the Arab American Democratic Club holds its annual candidates brunch. We got elections every year practically in Illinois. Samir Khalil is the executive director. Samir is a great guy. They'll have candidates running for every office, Democratic candidates, obviously. There's a brunch. There's free parking. It's at Nico's Banquet Hall at 76th and Harlem in Bridgeview. If you're free, you should go out there on Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. and meet the candidates. And Sarah, I believe you're gonna stop by there. I believe, right?
Yeah. Good. I'm gonna be there.
Yes, good. It's important that they see you. You've gotten a lot of press over the past few months. And when I first saw the press, I said, "Wow, she's gonna run." And then as I read the story, because controversial headlines are great to grab people's attention. And some people would run away from the story that you have, but you've actually embraced it because you have a good story to tell. And just give us a little explanation about how your life changed overnight as a result of a drunk driver hitting you. Tell us what happened, when that was, and then tell us the amazing story that you went through and how it motivated you to do what you're doing today.
Well, like I said before, my initial dream was to become a doctor. It was a dream that I really did have. It wasn't just my parents were behind it. But I did a lot of volunteer work abroad when I was in college. I worked on a groundbreaking HIV research. And I got accepted to a medical school with a full scholarship. And everything was going great until my third year when I was hit by a drunk driver, and that accident completely derailed my life.
Now, and you were in a car when a car hit you? When
yeah.
This drunk driver hit you, he hit your car. What happened to you in the accident?
I don't remember much about it. I woke up in the hospital a couple weeks later. I'd been in an induced coma for 2 weeks because of the brain swelling, and I had emergency surgery on my leg. It was really bad. I almost died in the accident, and thank God I didn't, but it took a long time for me to recuperate from that accident. After I was discharged from the hospital, I had to be transitioned to a skilled nursing facility to kind of have around the clock care and relearn how to speak and walk again. And it was very devastating to be witnessing all of my classmates going on to graduate under their fourth years, pick their residencies. Meanwhile, I'm in a skilled nursing facility just learning how to do basic tasks. And I was prescribed a lot of painkillers, an unusual amount in retrospect. I think my doctors felt that because I was a medical student, I understood the dangers of addiction, or I was somehow immune to the disease.
Right.
But they just, you know, as my disease was progressing, I just naturally kept asking for my doctors to raise my dose.
So you were hit by a car, a drunk driver. You're put in an induced coma. You almost die. You're put in an induced coma for 2 weeks. You come out of the coma with these terrible injuries that have to be really painful. I can't even imagine what you went through. It's normal for hospitals to give patients, especially with severe injuries, prescription drugs and painkillers. And yes, those are really highly addictive. So you get out, and this was when? About 2011, I think, right?
Yeah.
2011. You get out of the hospital. And what happens?
I was very depressed and immobilized, and I found solace in the euphoria that my opioid pain medication gave me. It was the only thing that really numbed the pain of the reality that I was living in. I was in sort of a mental prison, not being able to express myself, like being able to understand what people are saying to me and not being able to communicate back to them. It was so kind of dehumanizing, and I just isolated myself and I would wake up in the morning and the first thing I'd do is reach for my pill bottles. And it was way too late before I realized, wow, I am actually an addict now.
And when people hear that you were discharged from the hospital, that doesn't mean you were discharged from the suffering that you had to go through. You were grappling with, you know, learning how to speak and think and, you know, trying to get back to where you were before the accident, trying to overcome these physical issues, the depression. And I want to emphasize that what's really interesting about this story is when we talk about prescription drugs, we're not talking about things like social drugs that people use, like cocaine or crack or, heroin, just because they want to get high. We're talking about prescription drugs that you need.
I would just like to interject that with heroin, 80% of the time, the addiction starts with a legitimate prescription for opioids.
Right.
Thing about addiction, I'm not really too sure when it comes to like crack cocaine and like stimulants, but with opioids, a lot of it is blameless from the beginning.
Right. And they're pretty powerful drugs. But what I meant was you didn't turn to drugs because you were trying to have a good time. You had to turn to these opioids because you had a terrible, painful, burden physically that you had to overcome. And I don't think people really appreciate how bad that must have been. I've never been through that experience, but I tried to think about it. And I was thinking, I'm amazed that you got yourself out of it.
Yeah. The word addiction actually derives from the Latin word addicti, which means enslaved, because you are actually... you become enslaved to your addiction. I do a lot of work with kind of educating the Muslim community about addiction and what it is, because we've had a string of recent overdose deaths in the Muslim community, especially during Ramadan last year. There were a lot of opioid addicts who were dying of overdoses. They would be fasting during the day and be breaking their fast at night, and their tolerance would go down. And before, it's something that I felt like we needed to start having the cultural conversation, because addiction is a disease. It's genetic, it's progressive, it's chronic, and it's fatal. And it needs treatment and compassion and not judgment from the Muslim community or the criminal justice system. And we've actually, I've worked with some people in Minnesota to open up, so to speak, Muslim treatment centers that deliver culturally competent care. And why I'm bringing this up is because, like you said, it's not like I started this on my own or I wanted to go down this path.
Right.
I never would have chosen the path that I had gone down if I had a real choice. And it just kind of crept up on me. And by the time I realized that I was addicted, was around the time when my doctors were like, okay, you can't be in this much pain. Like, it's a year out. You're asking for us to increase your dose. Your fracture looks good. It's just like, we're skeptical that you're in this much pain.
So you recover, you're toward the recovery from the accident and the pain, but the addiction now has taken over. And you got in trouble then with the police.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
When my doctors cut me off, when they cut off my supply, I didn't know anybody that sold drugs. I didn't know where else to get them. So I did what I knew how to do, which was write prescriptions. And it didn't take me that long to get caught. I'm not a good criminal.
That's okay. You are not a good criminal, which I think is an asset. But so you actually, they cut you off from they start weaning you, trying to get you off the drugs. They stop giving you the painkillers. But your addiction is so overwhelming. You go out, you fake up some prescription pads to try and buy these drugs. And of course, that's illegal and you get arrested, right?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't even that I was weaned off. I was cut off. So
wow.
I was going through profound physical and psychological withdrawal. Physically, over a year of being prescribed massive amounts of painkillers, I mean, the withdrawal was pretty excruciating. And, you know, I did it the first time. Just, I told myself, you know, I'm just going to do it this one time to wean myself off. And this, I'll never do it again. But that's not how the disease really works. So after like a handful of times, when I was waiting for my prescription, the police showed up to arrest me and took me to the Cook County Jail, where I remained for 27 days and was very badly abused.
I'm gonna stop us there because unfortunately we still have to do commercials, so we're gonna take a commercial break right at that point. It's like being in a compelling TV series that I'm watching. We got you right at the top. We have everybody's attention. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this story because honestly, I admire you for what you did. Is an amazing story to dig yourself out of this problem that you were put in by somebody else. I think that you've turned it into something so positive that I think people connect with this story, and a lot of other people would run away from it. You know, especially in the Arab community, we don't like to talk about problems. So if you bring it up, you know, they're saying, no, haram, don't say nothing, you know, run from it, do something else, pretend like it never happened. But you grab the bull by the horns and you're using it in a way to inspire other people to do what you did to get to, you were a victim of something, an accident, a terrible accident that somebody else caused. You get hospitalized, you become addicted, then you get back and then you go through this whole process that we're going to talk about with the police and trying to break this addiction. And that even puts you into some terrible circumstances that we're going to talk about right after this break. So hang on. My guest for our listeners is Sarah Gadd. She's an Egyptian-American. She's Muslim. She is running for Congress in the 1st Congressional District. And when you hear her story and understand it, when you see the whole scope, you're going to agree with me that she's probably one of the best people to run for office that I've encountered in 40 years. She has a real reason to run for office and do good for people. I'm Ray Hanania. This is the Arab Street Radio. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Sarah Gadd, G-A-D. We're going to be right back right after these messages. This is Ray Hanania here at the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. It's February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody. We're broadcasting on WNZK AM 690 radio, and we'll have this podcast right after so people can hear it. Our guest really, to me, is I've covered politics for so many years. You don't run into a good person who actually gets pushed into politics. Usually people, when they get into politics, it's for selfish reasons. But our guest, Sarah Gadd, is actually in politics running for office because she not only has a good story to tell, but she has an experience that deals directly with a lot of the problems that people in the 1st District have that the incumbent congressman, in my opinion, Bobby Rush, hasn't really addressed. Her website is Sarah Gadd, SarahGadd2020.com. And I would urge you to go there and support her and do what you can to help her because she lifted herself up out of a terrible story, hit by a DUI drunk driver, gets hospitalized, gets serious injuries with serious pain. She's put in an induced coma for several weeks. When she gets out of it, she's in the hospital. She's taking all these pain medications, powerful amphetamines and opioids. And then she gets released. Basically, and it sounds like, okay, thanks, you can go. We can't believe you still need any prescription drugs. But she still has this now addiction to these powerful prescription drugs that are very addictive. And she goes out, she gets in trouble trying to get the drugs because she can't break the addiction initially. And then she gets arrested. Sarah, you get arrested, you're charged, you're put in a holding. You weren't convicted. The case was dismissed, I remember you telling me, but you're in the Cook County Jail for 27 days. That has to be, that in itself is a horrible story, given everything that you've gone through.
I mean, it was traumatizing, to say the least, just the act of being incarcerated, just being confined and, you know, being immobilized, not having your freedom, being accosted by a group of six police officers when you've never been in trouble with the law before. It was very frightening. And when I got to the jail, it took like 2 hours or 2 days, sorry, to actually book me into the jail. The Cook County Jail processes so many people every single day that it's so slow. The booking process usually takes around 24 to 48 hours. And I was going through, again, physical withdrawal. And I think it just kind of added to the trauma of the circumstances and everything that was going on around me. And when I finally got to my unit, they had put me in maximum security because of overcrowding. And I was targeted from the first day I arrived. I was targeted. There's a lot of sexual harassment, sexual assault that takes place in correctional facilities, which is why we have things like the Federal Prison Rape Elimination Act. And when I was booked into the jail, I was given a copy of the handbook, and it said, if you are sexually assaulted or harassed, contact the nearest correctional officer and contact the PREA hotline. So I thought that was actually the right thing to do, so that's what I did. But when I reported it, I got deemed as a snitch. The correctional officer didn't actually separate me from the person who had sexually assaulted me. She told the person.
That's amazing. That's so upsetting to hear that.
Yeah, that I had snitched. And there's a saying that snitches get stitches. And I learned that the hard way.
So you probably go through something almost as bad as the original DUI accident. You're in there 27 days. And just to point out something that you told me earlier, you know, you should have been put in a lighter area for misdemeanor cases. I mean, you were being held because you wrote a prescription for a drug. You weren't selling drugs. You weren't at that level at all. You were just trying to get a prescription drug to, you know, deal with the pain-killing addiction you had. But it's so overcrowded, they put you in with the felonies, right?
Well, I would go so far as to say I never belonged in the first place. No nonviolent drug offenders belong in jail. They belong
right.
in treatment.
Right. I know that's one of your issues that you're talking about in the campaign. So you're, and I want to just continue the story. You're in there 27 days. You get sexually harassed. You get beaten. It had to have been horrible. And then the case is dismissed, right?
Yeah, the case ends up being dismissed after being in there for 27 days, being beaten, raped, stabbed, a solitary confinement stint. When my sister had come to visit me unannounced and saw the condition I was in, she saw that I had just been badly beaten, like there was blood streaming down my face and my nose, and I had cuts, and it was not a good situation. So, you know, my sister is a human rights attorney, so you can imagine that she raised hell and they retaliated against me.
Right. You get punished, right? For raising the issue. Instead of being protected,
exactly,
the system doesn't protect you. I mean, that's another issue that's upsetting, that it's almost as if the, you know, you hear these stories that the criminals run the, you know, the jails, they always say, and that some of the guards are in cahoots with these, you know, criminals. And the way you were treated is just offensive to me. It's so offensive that they allowed that to happen to you. And then you're finally released, right? And the case is dismissed. Yeah. So you go through this whole thing and nobody apologizes. Nobody helps you. You're back on the street and you get in trouble again, right?
Yeah, once you're released from jail, once you have an arrest record or a conviction or something of that matter, now you're trying to get back on your feet. You're trying to apply for jobs. You're trying to, start your life again, because there's one thing I can tell you about people in jail is that nobody wants to go back. But our system makes it so hard for people to get back on their feet. I couldn't find a job or a place to live. I was, homeless in Chicago in the middle of January, and I still had an addiction. Jail did nothing to treat my addiction. It made worse. The trauma that I had sustained, I now wanted to use more than ever just to numb what had happened to me. I couldn't. It was just kind of in a like twilight zone. Like, did all this really just happen to me? And I was so traumatized. I did not want to, just be in my own thoughts. And my use just continued and continued to escalate. And I just kind of became what they call a revolving door offender.
So you get arrested two more times. Yeah. You do spend. Did you actually get a conviction? Was there actually?
Yeah, I actually did. I did actually get a conviction for a nonviolent drug offense.
And then you spent, I think, 5 days in jail in addition to the 27 in holding.
And you're
given probation, right? Because obviously it's right. It was nonviolent. Use, and I think the circumstances, any judge I think would look at that and understand what the issue was. But you're the third time you get out and then you overdose, and it's when you overdose that they step in, the doctors, and they give you a medication that helps you overcome the addiction and you get back on your feet.
Yeah, I was introduced to a medication that I wish I would have known all along about, because it really did save my life, and it could have spared me a lot of the loss that I had suffered because of my addiction. After I was released from jail, the third time, I was only in there for 5 days. I had violated my probation by testing positive for drugs. When I got out, just 5 days of being abstinent was enough to lower my tolerance, such that just by using the same amount as I was using 5 days earlier, it was enough for me to overdose. And I woke up in an ambulance being injected with Narcan, which is the opioid overdose reversal drug.
Right.
And, I was introduced to this medication in the hospital called buprenorphine. And buprenorphine is one of three FDA-approved medications to treat opioid addiction. Highly effective, just very underutilized, which is why it took me 2-3 years to learn it even existed. But to make a long story short, I was skeptical about the drug because nothing had worked for me by that point, but I was amazed when I was released from the hospital that I had no cravings,
wow,
no withdrawal symptoms. And that's when I was forced to confront the reality that I had destroyed my life, or my addiction had destroyed my life. But I got a second chance when an attorney named Kathleen Zellner gave me a job at her law firm. She saw how badly I was struggling to get back on my feet. I was working at a as an overnight clerk at a 7-Eleven at that point, and barely making it. So she just said, well, why don't you come work for me? She was suing the county jail on my behalf because of the trauma that I had sustained. I mean, I'd have reconstructive surgery on my face when I was released. So that what she did for me, giving me that job, changed everything.
I was going to say, I'm going to stop you right there because we got to take one more break. And you know what? I hope Zellner beats the heck out of the county jail and the system, because this story, the more I hear it, the more it angers me that somebody like you didn't get the kind of help that you needed. It took so long to finally get there, and you practically, it seems, you dug yourself out of this with some help, but you ended up doing it, and now you're back on your feet, you're drug-free, you have this amazing story to tell, and you're using it to help other people, a lot of other people who go through the same thing, to get them on their feet. And it takes you to Washington. We're going to take a break, and we're going to pick up the story right after the break. This is the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania here at WNZK AM 690 Radio. My guest is Sarah Gadd. Her website is sarahgadd2020.com. SARAHGAD2020.com. We're going to continue the conversation with her right after these messages. And welcome back to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania here at WNZK 690 AM Radio, broadcasting out of Detroit. I'm in Chicago. My guest on the line with me is Sarah Gadd, G-A-D. She's a candidate in the 1st Congressional District in the March 17, 2020 Democratic primary. Her website is Sarah Gadd, SARAHGAD2020.com. I really urge you to go there, because 1 hour isn't even close to being enough to discuss this powerful story and compelling story that she has. And we're just really kind of touching on the highlights. So, Sarah, you meet Kathleen Zellner, who is a phenomenal attorney. I know her. I've heard of her. And she puts you on a right path to get back on your feet. She gives you work. And from what I understand it, you've created a couple foundations, or you work for some foundations to help people with issues like that. Give us kind of a little quick recap about that and how it brought you to Washington, where you were at hearings that Bobby Rush should have been at, but who, by the way, has one of the worst attendance records in Illinois and is ranked 10th. Out of 435 congressmen in terms of having the highest absentee rate, just not going to meetings. Tell us, give us a little recap about that.
All time.
Pardon me?
He ranks worst of all time out of any congressman in history.
So he's gotten worse than the last data I saw was he was the 10th worst, but now he's even, and that's 435 people. How could you know, anybody in that area, you'd think they flunked school and you'd send them back, but he keeps getting reelected for the wrong reasons. But tell us how, you know, a little bit about that, kind of recap it for us, because unfortunately we only got like 6 minutes left.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm already on the edge of tears, because this story is so touching, and I hope this story touches other people, you know, to want to come out and help you, because no candidate that I've met in 40 years deserves to be supported the way you deserve to be supported.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. That means a lot. Yeah, so when I was working for Ms. Zellner, just the job she gave me, having a stable income that was a livable income, I was able to reestablish myself and start getting involved with causes that I was passionate about, like mostly criminal justice reform, to say the least. And I was working on high-profile cases throughout Illinois. I had contributed to exonerations. I had, like, the work that I was doing was actually helping exonerate people that were wrongfully. And I took an even greater interest in criminal justice because I saw egregious miscarriages under the law, things like, you know, police officers and prosecutors fabricating evidence you know, to be in jail is one thing. To be there when you're innocent, I can't even imagine. I started a mobile coat drive for the homeless. I saw somebody walking in a t-shirt in like 0 degree weather in Chicago and just remembering what it's like to be homeless in Chicago. I just gave him the coat off my back and started a coat drive that's been in existence for 6 years now, and five years, and we've collected 3,000 coats for the Chicago homeless to date. And after 2.5 years of working for Ms. Sellner, I had built up the credibility that I needed to be able to apply to law school and not get my application laughed off of the admission.
And you're in your third year of law school right now.
University of Chicago.
And Zellner sends you to Washington or the foundations you're working with, and you launched a couple too, I think, right?
Yeah, I also started a program or an organization called Addiction to Action, which brings life-saving treatment for opioid addiction into jails and prisons so that people don't overdose when they get out like I did and like eight of my friends did to this day, but actually died. And I was working on a legal research paper that argued why it's unconstitutional not to have these medications available. That paper got me to Washington, D.C. I had already had people in the community talking to me about possibly running for office because they're tired of absent leadership. They're tired of not being heard. In the suburbs especially, they feel like they don't have an advocate. And some of the issues that I've touched on, like opioid addiction and mental illness and DUIs and things like that, those are very big issues in the suburbs. I mean, I've spoken at law enforcement agencies and fire departments all over the suburbs. I've spoken Beverly, Mokena, Midlothian, Crestwood, Tinley Park, Oak Park, and pretty unanimously throughout the suburbs, they're lacking resources to deal with all the mental health calls that they get, all the overdose and suicide and crisis calls that they get. And I guess to skip ahead or to skip back a little, I went to DC for the summer to familiarize myself with the process of what it was like to be in Congress, to see if I felt like I could be a good fit and a capable leader for my district. I participated in congressional hearings and briefings almost every day of the week. Some were put on by Bobby's own committees, and he wasn't there.
He wasn't even there for his own committees. That's listen, Sarah, we're up against time, and I could talk to you forever about this. I'm just going to ask listeners to go to your website to continue this at Sarah Gadd, SARAHGAD 2020.com. Any final quick words before we say thank you?
I'm running in the first district of Illinois against Bobby Rush. The primary election's on March 17th of 2020. So if you live in the south side of Chicago or the southwest suburbs, I really encourage you to go to my website, go to my Facebook page at Sarah R. Gadd 2020. That's my Facebook page. It's Sarah with an H, R-G-A-D 2020. We are always posting updates about events that we're having and just updates about the campaign. You can watch my campaign video there that tells my entire story in three minutes and 14 seconds.
All right, Sarah, listen, thank you for being on the show. I want to thank everybody at WNZK for hosting it. We'll have all the information at our website that you just heard with the podcast when it's out there. Please do what you can to support Sarah Gadd. Sarah, thank you for joining us this morning. I wish we had more time to continue this. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. All right. Bye-bye, everybody. Listen, thank you again for listening. I'm Ray Hanania. We'll be back second Friday of the month here at WNZK AM 690. Take it easy. Bye-bye, everybody.
The views expressed are...
You've been listening to the Ray Hanania on Politics podcast. Visit hanania.com for all my podcasts, my award-winning syndicated columns on Chicagoland politics, and my columns on Middle East politics. Thank you for listening.